1098-765-4321. 1020-3040, alongside Rick Bonus, head coach, Dallas Stars.
Enter.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Rick Bonus, Dallas Stars. I'm giving him the promotion, head coach, Dallas Stars.
Hey, don't do me any favors here.
Welcome once again to a special edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Elliot, this is our feature interview with Rick Bonus, Dallas Stars head coach. And this is a gentleman who thought at the beginning of the season he was going to be the assistant coach for the entire year for a Stanley Cup contender. Guess again, you're the head coach.
Yes, that was a morning that shocked all of us because we were at the Board of Governors and we asked them the night before, the commissioner and the deputy commissioner, is there anyone else under investigation? And they said no. And the next morning we found out that Jim Montgomery was out and Rick Bonus is in. So I don't know who was more surprised, Rick Bonus or everybody else, but he's got them humming now. Like I think they're pretty good. Dallas was my preseason Stanley Cup prediction, and I don't believe you ever change as long as it's still possible, but I feel a bit more confident now than I did maybe in October.
He's a coach that's really comfortable in his skin. You can tell that this guy has been behind the bench more than anyone in the history of the NHL. Here's Rick Bonus on 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by GMC Sierra Trucks. Elliot, please be joined now by the head coach of the Dallas Stars. I know he wants to interject here and say interim head coach, but are you giving him the promotion now?
Yes. As far as I'm concerned, he is the head coach of the Dallas Stars.
He is.
My vote is more important than Jim Nill's.
Sorry, Jim, but here's your new bench boss full time. Rick Bonus joins us on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Now, something we found out right before we started. You were once a real life Reggie Dunlop and had the jacket to prove it.
I was a player coach in the American Hockey League back in 1982-83, I believe. What happened was Ron Rossette had been named the head coach of the American Hockey League. Winnipeg Jets were moving their farm team to Sherbrooke Jets. Yeah. And Ron had had a brain tumor removed in July, so he was not ready to start the season. So I was the captain of the team and basically a playing assistant coach anyways at that point. And John Ferguson Sr., the GM at the time, asked me to go until probably Christmas as player coach, and I didn't know what I was doing, so I said, sure, I can do that. Doesn't sound hard. Way over my head. So as little as I know now, yeah, I knew a lot less then. So I was player coach, and I would come off the ice and I would stand behind the bench, and then I would bench myself for a lot of the times, but there's times I'd have to play. But I was a player coach, and unfortunately Ron was unable to come back, so I did finish the year as player coach.
Of all the players that you've had.
Hold on one second. Yes. Because part of this is televised. And we have to give a shout out to the Kess and Juice podcast, which is Kevin Bieksa. Correct. And Ryan Kessler. Because without them, I wouldn't have known this. But you had a Reggie Dunlop jacket. And for those who can see this on YouTube, this is not it. What happened
to this is
jacket?
Not it. And I took so much abuse from those two that I eventually just had to retire it. My wife bought it. She absolutely loved it. And I wore it for a little bit. But again, the verbal abuse from those two guys, I couldn't take it anymore. But I did wear it when I wasn't around them. I loved that jacket. It was very comfortable. It didn't matter what it looked like. It was very comfortable.
Hey, comfort is more important
exactly
than anything
right.
else.
Of all the players that you've had, and you've been behind the bench for a number of years, who could you see as a Reggie Dunlop? Is there one or two players you could say, you know what, this guy could be a player coach?
Oh, there's quite a few that could do that. The one guy I'm glad has got into coaching is Alex Burrows. Great hockey sense and great hockey mind and very, very competitive. So I know he's an assistant coach in Laval with the Montreal Canadiens. At one point, he will be a National Hockey League coach. And if you talk to Daniel and Hank and they'd say, who is one of the best players you ever played with? It would be Alex Burrows. Not drafted, worked his way up. So he had the character, he had the work ethic, he had the determination, and he had a really good hockey mind. He had a really good hockey sense out there. So could he have done that? Absolutely. And I'm glad he's got into coaching. The game needs more coaches like Alex Burrows, who worked their way up the hard way, wasn't given anything. Yep. He was never deterred from he just kept pushing forward till he made it. And when he made it, he never took a day in the league for granted. Mm-hmm. Worked very hard every day, and he brought it every day. And he knew how fortunate he was to play in our league, because I always tell our players today, it's truly a blessing to play in our league every day and never take it for granted. So Alex Burrows would be the guy that I would say definitely could have handled that.
Quick follow-up on Burrows. How did that conversation go to put him with the Sedins?
I don't know if he kind of just fell into it or what. I don't remember, but I do know that it fit. And as a coach, sometimes you can't define chemistry, but you can see it. And you could see the chemistry between Alex and the Twins. To play with the Twins, you had to be patient, and you had to know you weren't their first look. You were always their second or third look with the puck, and you had to know where to go. And Alex had that ability to read off of them, get to the right spot, go to the net, and knowing that he could be wide open with Hank with the puck, but he's looking for Danny first, and then you're getting the second look. But he had the patience and the hockey sense and the feel how to play with them. There was just great chemistry there. And Alex was a gritty guy. Like, people don't understand. Like, he would take the heat, and he'd go in the corners, he'd go to the net, and he'd take a lot of the beating, but he never complained. But he just, it just fit.
When you coached Burrows, were you this complimentary to him?
I coached the D-Dorf. Yeah.
That's right.
But he did help our penalty killing a lot, so I dealt with Alex a lot. And yeah, but you know what? You'd never get upset at a guy like Alex, because he knew he was giving you everything every day. Mm-hmm. There was never an issue, okay, Alex, we got to get going here. You got to do this. You got to work harder. There was never an issue with that, so I didn't have to deal with that.
Was there anyone you ever coached who then went into coaching and you said, I cannot believe that this guy is behind a bench? I never, ever would have thought it.
Well, you know, I've coached so many players over the years. I'd have to give that one some thought. I'm sorry. Yeah, but no, no one jumps out of my mind. No. There's a lot of guys that I didn't coach that I'm shocked got into coaching. All right, I know one guy who, yeah, let's talk about him, Travis Green in Vancouver. Mm. And every time I see him, he always tells me, Bones, I must have drove you crazy as a player. And so it is Travis Green. But Travis, again, he was a smart hockey player, really good with the puck, good offensive instincts. Didn't have the greatest practice habits, right? But then, so I know the work ethic you need to be a coach in this league. But and give Travis a lot of credit. He went to junior as an assistant coach. He learned the hard way. Another guy that paid his dues. So I'm very, very happy for Travis. But again, every time I see him, he said, Bones, I must have drove you crazy. I said, a little bit at times.
Bruce Boudreau says the same thing. Like, I once asked him, like, what would Bruce Boudreau, the coach, have thought about Bruce Boudreau, the player? He goes, I would have hated him. Like, that's his line. I would have hated him.
Want to get to the Dallas Stars here, and we will in a second, but I want to rewind to Tampa quickly. I want to focus on two defensemen. So, speaking with someone a while ago about yourself and your time in Tampa, and the first thing this person said to me was, he saved Braden Coburn's career. Before I ask you about Victor Hedman, what did you do with Braden Coburn?
That's a good question. I'm surprised to hear that, because when we got Braden Coburn, what you could see right away was a big guy that could skate, great mobility, and a very competitive guy. I think maybe his role changed when he came to us in Tampa. He was no longer looked at as, okay, you got to go out there and play 25 minutes in the power play, do everything. I think maybe the role that he had to play when we got him. Mm-hmm. But what you loved about Kobe, that he could play right or left, shift to shift, it never bothered him. Again, great mobility for a big man, very competitive, very coachable. And a guy like Kobe, sometimes you got to go find guys. Okay, we got to look at some video here. That Kobe would come to me and say, let's look at some stuff. So he knew he wanted to get better. He knew he had to keep working and keep getting better to stay in the league, and which he did. And so I'm kind of surprised to hear that, because I never had any issues with Kobe. I thought he was a good player when we got him. Mm-hmm. I think probably most of that is based on his role. I don't know what the expectations were and the role of with his other teams. It's none of my business. But I do know when he came to Tampa, we needed a big guy, stay at home, play defense, be physical, and could move the puck, and Kobe did fit the bill.
The other conversation we had about you in the Tampa defense was Victor Hedman. And this person said, Rick Bowness really helped this guy flourish by becoming his friend. More so than just teaching top down, he became Victor Hedman's friend, and that built that trust with Hedman that allowed him to flourish? Your time with Hedman.
Tell you who helped me with that was Matthias Olin. Because Olin and I had Vancouver, had a great rapport with him, and then he signed with Tampa. So when I did sign with Tampa, talked a lot about Olin, about Victor. He said he's had a lot of coaches. When a young player comes into our league and has three or four or five coaches, he's hearing three or four sure. different voices, different approaches. He said he doesn't really trust coaches. So as soon as I heard that, okay, that's interesting. So my first approach with Victor, we didn't talk hockey. We just talked family. We talked off-ice stuff. We didn't talk about coaching as a player. I knew I had to build his trust before we could even delve into the hockey. So I spent a lot... Again, you're not spending a lot of time with them away from the rink, but every chance I get, I would sit with Victor, we'd talk, and again, it wasn't about on-ice stuff. It was everything but on-ice stuff. I knew I had to build a rapport with him. I knew I had to build his trust, and you could see what a great player was going to be. He didn't realize it, but we could see it, and I say this about Victor all the time. I've never seen a guy in our league that is 6'6" that can skate like Victor Hedman and does all the great things that kid can do. I think he just needed to trust somebody, and he needed to know that we had his back and that we were there to help him, not just to, you know, throw our philosophy on him all the time. Mm-hmm. I had to build that trust, and then I had to let him play to his instincts, and we had that relationship that eventually there was a solid trust. And today, like, Victor's like an adopted son to my wife Judy and I. We just love the kid, and we still stay in touch with him. But Victor Hedman's one of my all-time favorite players to coach, and just a wonderful kid. But again, he's like a son to me.
What was the topic? Like you said, talked about family. Was there anything in particular that you guys realized that you had in common, an interest or something like that, that really got the relationship going?
He was very proud of his family back in Sweden. His older brother played in the leagues over there, and he was very proud of his parents. He knew the sacrifices they had made. Having my son Ryan playing the OHL for 4 years and was drafted and didn't make it, and we talked about that. So I think it was more based on family than anything. Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, start to talk about his career and where he wanted to go, and it took a couple of months. Mm-hmm. But well worth it.
I want to talk to you about this year. You're in Dallas. You're the associate coach.
I'm the interim head coach.
Yes.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah, no, you're the interim head coach. I promise I will stick to it for the purpose of this question. I know I'm not going to dig into what happened with you, but I'm curious about how much lead time did you have? Like, all of a sudden, you're the head coach of the team out of nowhere. How much lead time do you have, and how do you get things back on the rails? Because they could have gone right off for the Stars at that time.
There was no headway into this. It was just walked in the morning, and we need you to be the interim head coach. Floored, absolutely floored. Never saw it coming. Wasn't prepared for that one bit. So no one saw it coming, and all of a sudden, the whole coaching thing changed. So no, there was no preparation for that. I just kind of said, okay. It took a little while to get in my head, okay, what am I going to do now? But I've been around long enough that, fortunately, that, yeah, okay, now we got to approach things differently here. I've got to take a whole different approach to dealing with players, dealing with game prep, dealing with media, dealing with everything. And was it a little uncomfortable at the start? Absolutely. You got to remember, this was not a job that I wanted. This wasn't a job that I applied for. They've asked me to come in and finish the season as the interim coach. Okay, we can do that. So was I expecting this? Absolutely not. Was I looking for it? Absolutely not. That was the last thing in my mind. But okay, so if Tom and Jim asked me to do this, and now, okay, I've got to do the best job I can. Now, in that saying that, it took a while to get comfortable, because first of all, when you're associate coach or assistant, no one wants to talk to you. It's great. You can hide. You can hide in the background, which I love. I'm a very private person. So not being in the limelight, I thought was great. I could just coach the defense, coach the penalty kill, work with some forwards and that. And no one noticed, and no one wanted to talk to me. And I thought that was great. Now you're dealing with a lot of noise, like I like to say, around the coaching. And I found that difficult for probably the first month, that, okay, I've got to get used to this. Like, I just want to coach. That's what I love doing, is coaching. But when you're the head coach in the NHL today, as compared to when I was the last time, there's just a lot more involved. There's a lot more around the team. There's a lot more noise around the coaching fraternity today. And I had to get used to that. And honestly, I'm just, I don't know how many games I've coached. It doesn't matter. With Dallas as the head coach, it's just now getting to be a little more comfortable. But that was the biggest change for me, being taken aback by the whole thing that developed as quickly as it did, walking in at 7 o'clock and as the assistant, and at 7:01 you're the interim head coach. What? Where'd this come from? And so it's taken a while.
In your first head coaching job, your stars were Dale Hawerchuk and Thomas Steen. How does it compare dealing with Dale Hawerchuk and Thomas Steen in 1986 to dealing with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn in 2020?
Well, the difference, it was that I had actually played with Dale and Thomas. Right? So when we drafted Dale back, and when we drafted Dale 81, so I played a little bit with Dale and I played a little bit with Thomas because I was up and down from the minors. And then I was an assistant coach for 3 years. So I had a good rapport with those guys prior to me coming in as the interim. Well, again, that was interim when they fired Danny Maloney. Coming into Dallas, I had no idea of, you know, any relationship at all with Tyler and Jamie. So again, I had to build a relationship with them. And again, now that my role has changed, the title has changed, my relationship with them has changed. I'm far more involved with them now than previous, because just coaching the defense and coaching the penalty killing didn't have a lot to do with them. Just, you know, you talk to them as a coach every day and a friend every day. So now I've worked hard to develop a strong relationship with them. And listen, I know there's been, you know, some criticism over the past about them but not scoring this and that. Both of these guys, as far as I'm concerned, their hearts are in the right place. They want to win. Maybe the numbers aren't what everyone expected and based on salary, based on whatever, but their hearts are in the right place. They want to win. So my relationship with them is based on that. And I have a lot of respect for their character, a lot of respect for what they bring to the ice.
You know, you mentioned coming to Dallas, and right away there were two defensemen. I think a lot of people noticed right away their game went to a new level with you handling the defense. One is Esa Lindell, and the other is Jamie Oleksiak. How much did you look at these two players and said, there's more here and I can get it out of them?
Well, with Esa, if all the, you know, when I went there last year, you watch video over the summer so you can get a feel for the guys. I don't know anything about Dallas, really. We only played them once or twice a year, and that was it. And then when you get to work with them, of all the players that were in Dallas, he's the best of them in terms of I didn't know what I was getting and how good a player he was. He's much better player than I realized. You know, he's a wonderful, wonderful person, great teammate. But this guy is he's what you want as a coach, a guy that shows up every day. He works every day. He has a great attitude, and he brings it every day. But again, a smart player. You can play in any situation against anybody. And for a young guy, and all of a sudden his minutes went way up and his responsibilities went way up, and he's handled it remarkably well. But it speaks of his character and it speaks of his talent. With Jamie last year when we got him, didn't know much about him either. And it took a little while. He was a healthy scratch a couple of times. Then we got him settled down and we got him playing his game. And we lost Jamie in the playoffs against St. Louis, and it was noticeable when Jamie was not in our lineup. Yeah, he brings a physical presence and another big guy that can skate, another coachable kid. He's a very laid-back guy. There's no question about that. So you work with a guy like that, don't bring that personality on the ice. We need you to be physical. It's not a natural instinct, but he responded. And his confidence just grew. And so I had a conversation with him this year in training camp, and I don't mind sharing with you guys then. I went to Jamie and said, "Now, Jamie, we've got to get to the point where the coaches aren't discussing, are you a healthy scratch or are you in the lineup? Like, we're not behind the scenes talking about you. If you play the way we know you can play, that conversation will not happen. But that's up to you. That's not up to me. That's up to you to go on the ice and do it every day." And that's what he's done. He brings it every day. And he's a huge part of our team now. From being a healthy scratch when we first got him to where he is today, there's both ends of the spectrum. Listen, this guy can play. And he's a big help to our hockey club and a wonderful guy, good teammate. In fact, there was a couple of games ago, somebody took a run at Miro. Well, all of a sudden, the guys got plastered up against the board, because Jamie wasn't very happy about that. But he understands now his importance to the team, and he enjoys that role that we've given him.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Coaches Association. And when you first started, there was nothing like that. And if you ever walked in and said, like, at that time, coaches said, we want to start a group, you probably would have been blackballed.
Well, let's go back to the 80s, because those conversations did take place. Okay. And we did try to get something going. And we and some head coaches lost their job. And so this is this. Yeah, they did. And I know I'm aging myself with that, but some coaches, and that was never proven, obviously, that they were fired because we're trying to get an association going.
But you guys knew, like in the group,
we knew we needed to get it. You know, the Players Association was gaining strength. We felt at that point we needed something. We didn't have any pension benefits back there. It was here's your salary, take it or leave it. Like, we didn't have any strength. So the association today has done a remarkable job for every coach, not just at our level, but anyone aspiring to be a coach, because all the information in terms of salaries is there for you. And it just opens up more doors that we have an association so you can contact other coaches. So there's more interaction between our coaching now than their coaching fraternity now than there ever was. And a lot of that is based because of the of our association. You know, we talk about salary information, and they've done a phenomenal job just getting every, imagine that now, we're just getting to the stage that every coach in our league now has a pension. We never had that before. There was probably 40% of our coaches weren't even involved in any team's pension. Mm. So the fact that we have an association now that'll go to bat for us and fight for us as a group, not just one or two guys, which was the case before, it's remarkable the steps that we've taken. But it's not just the pension, it's the health benefits. It's you want your green card, your visas, any help, you, your wills, anything you need, our association takes care of that. We've never had that before. And I've been coaching this league since 1983, and I tell Mike and Lindsay they've done a phenomenal job of bringing this association to where it is today. The strength of our group, it's never been like this. The communication with our group has never been like this. So you give Mike and Lindsay a lot of credit for getting us to where we are today. And I tell our coaches that too, because you get a lot of coaches coming into our league, and I'm telling them, like, this wasn't like this 10, 15 years ago. Like, you guys are walking into a pretty good scenario. A lot of coaches have paid the dues, paid their dues to get you to this stage, but we needed this support, and they've done a great job with the league.
How much support is there amongst coaches? There is a feeling that there's 31 teams, so there's 31 head coaching jobs, and everybody would, you know, knock their grandmother down an icy road to get one of these jobs. Is it like that? Is it that competitive? Is it that dog eat dog? Or is there support amongst the group?
There's support. You know, I'm in a different stage of my career, and I get that. But for a young guy coming into our league, and this, I try to talk to them, like, they're very, very supportive. No one wants to see a head coach get fired. Do they all want head coaching jobs? Absolutely. That's why they're getting into the business, why they're getting into the industry. They all want that shot at a head coaching job. But in saying that, we're all very supportive of each other. We're all very saddened and disappointed when one of us gets fired, because no one wants to go through that, because I've been through it a few more times than I want to remember. It's not a fun experience. So you never, ever want to see one of your partners get fired. That being said, it opens the door for someone else. And yeah, there's a lot of guys that want to get a head job. And so, yeah, there's a pros and cons to it. You just hate to see someone get fired, but it also opens the door for someone else.
Here's my last question. You mentioned your son, Ryan. He runs scouting.
He is director of pro scouting for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
So let's just say that at some point, Ryan becomes a general manager and he says, Dad, I need a coach.
Oh, I'll be too old by
then.
No, I've already told him. You become a GM. I want to be a consultant.
Okay.
I think that'd be awesome.
Consultant's the best job in the world.
So I say, how do you get one of those jobs?
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it this way. Ryan's a GM, and he says to you, Dad, I got a problem with my team. I got to make a change. I need you to be my interim head coach just to help me see what's going on down there. Do you take a job as coach under Ryan Bonus, the general manager?
Man, that's hypothetical. Listen, he's my son. I would do absolutely anything in the world to help him. And I think we would both know, because that's a few years away, and I'm 65 now, that would be a very short-term thing. Let's put it this way. It's like I wouldn't be there to extend my coaching career at all.
Okay. Well, then, like, did you ever try to dissuade him from becoming an executive or anything like that? Or you were always, Ryan, you got to follow your path?
First of all, he's a lot smarter than I am because he doesn't want to coach. he wants to be a general manager. But Ryan's always had what I've had, the passion for the game. And, you know, he played 4 years in junior and he went to St. Mary's, got his degree and played a year in the East Coast League. But he's always had the passion for the game. And so my oldest son, Ricky, never played until he played a little house league in Ottawa and never steered Ricky towards hockey whatsoever. That never bothered me one bit. And eventually Ricky ended up working in the league in the media relations department for Detroit and Columbus. But now he's on his own business-wise. But Ryan's always had that passion. So I've kind of helped him with that. And again, I'm glad that he's in the game because I know how much he loves the game. So when they were kids, I'd bring them to the rink in the morning. Well, Ryan would run into the locker room and he'd be working with the trainers. He'd be doing laundry, hanging up sweaters, looking at equipment. And then he'd come in at noon and say, geez, Dad, they're buying me a piece of pizza. So isn't this great, Ryan? So we got to raise your level here. We got to be more demanding. Well, Ricky would come in, he'd go on the computer and he'd be teaching his father how to use the computer. So Ricky had the brains, but Ryan's always had the passion. So I'm glad he's in the game and I'm really, because he is chasing his dream of being a general manager. Mm-hmm. And this, I never forced hockey on him. This is a natural, he's like I am. He just loves the game.
You've done so much in this game as a player, certainly as a coach as well.
I wasn't a very good player. Let's not kid yourself.
You played in the NHL.
I played.
That's good.
And as I tell my kids, because they're always bugging me about my low stats, there was only 17 teams back then. I might be able to be a regular in this league today with 31 teams.
So you've checked a lot of boxes. Essentially, is what I'm getting at. You've checked a lot. And Winter Classic would have been another box, I would imagine, that you checked behind the bench with the Dallas Stars. How many more boxes are there for Rick Bowen?
I just want to get a Stanley Cup. But I'm running out of time, and I get that. I'm 65 now. Yeah, that would be huge for me. I've coached over 2,400 games. I'd like to get to over 2,500 next year at some point. But the Stanley Cup is still what drives me. It's like when I went to Dallas last summer. It's not like I needed the job. I didn't go there because I needed a job. I went there because I wanted to win the Stanley Cup, and there's a big difference there. I had four or five other opportunities. I could have retired. That wasn't, you know, if I wanted to do that. But that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to take one more really good shot at the Stanley Cup, and I have that with Dallas.
This has been a lot of fun. Congratulations on your success so far. Good luck checking that last box.
Well, we're going to keep chasing it. I'm running out of time, but we're going to keep
chasing.
You're
a young 65. Oh, yeah. Rick. You're a young 65.
Is there such a thing?
Yes.
I keep hearing this about, the 65 is now the 45. When do I feel 45 again?
You know, I got to tell you, I'm turning 50 this year, and my buddy's like, you don't look a day older than 70. So, like, you look better at 65 than I do at 49.
Keep those Stars playing the way you did against Carolina on Tuesday. Is that the best game you guys played all year?
That's one of the best for a while. And again, like I told you earlier, we played a great game against Tampa coming out of the break. And it's been a little inconsistent, but the last three games have been really good. We played a really good game in St. Louis on Saturday night, but last night we were really happy with our game. And we've got a tough week ahead of us with Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. We get that, and we're going to have to play that well to have some success on this trip.
Excellent. Thanks so much for this, Rick.
My pleasure. Well,
shame on.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Okay. Where do you want it? Right there.
Okay. Do everything like I do.
Okay.
Everything will be great.
I'll be a TV star then.
I love your black.